chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this Saturday broadcast with an interview that Alex had with Judge Andrew Napolitano. And it's about this recent release done by Durham. And it implicates Hillary and even people above her, even Obama, may be liable sooner or later to what went on these investigations and wiretapping and spying on President Trump. So here we go with a really good interview with Andrew Napolitano and Alex.
Well, the I don't know about the indictments because some of these crimes have a 5-year statute of limitations, and much of this happened in 2016, so do the math. We're beyond the 5 years, which means Hillary herself may skate. However, if this was a conspiracy, and apparently it was, and if John Durham can report it, the 5 years is measured when the crime is completed, not when the crime started. So it would depend how far into the Trump administration the conspiracy extended. If the conspiracy ended on Election Day, it's too late to do anything about it. But it appears from the documents that John Durham filed on Friday afternoon that the conspiracy did not end on Election Day. It appears that there was a conversation in the Oval Office after Trump was elected, in which President Obama himself participated, and discussions were had about using federal assets to spy on him. And there are two very interesting people present there besides the President Obama. One is Jake Sullivan, who was Mrs. Clinton's chief intelligence advisor on spying and intelligence matters. He's now President Joe Biden's national security director. He has the highest national security clearance in the country. It's the same as the president's. The other interesting person there was Vice President Joe Biden. Now, this, of course, was 4 years ago. Was he part, Alex, was he part of the conspiracy to undermine Donald Trump's presidency by using federal assets?
But what Durham is saying as this continued on into the White House, and if you look at this and the things they said and did, I mean, I think that's where Durham's going. What do you think's happening?
I think that's where he's going as well. And he very well may be targeting the former president, Barack Obama. I mean, if Barack Obama convened a group of people, if he convened a group of people in the Oval Office, which included Jack Brennan, whom you see there, then the head of the CIA, Jim Comey, the head of the FBI, Mrs. Clinton, Joe Biden, Jake Sullivan, and himself, and they agreed to use the assets of the federal government to spy on and thus undermine the president-elect who was about to become the president of the United States, then we have a very, very serious problem on our hands. In terms of the vaccines, I've been campaigning against them for a long time. It's not a vaccine, as you have said. A vaccine gives you a small dose of the disease. Your body fights it off. You have the immunity and the antibodies forever. This is a chemical cocktail, which is an experiment at lessening the effects of the disease. It doesn't prevent you from getting it. It doesn't prevent you from transmitting it. The Supreme Court has ruled several times, you control your own body. You decide what goes into it. The government of the United States of America signed a treaty called the Nuremberg Protocols, which prohibit the use of government compulsion to take experimental chemicals into the body. So we are on very solid ground legally and morally, but big government, big pharma and big medicine have persuaded the public that they are right and we are wrong. So again, it takes courage. The truck drivers in Canada have to be courageous. People like you need to be courageous. People listening to us now need to recognize that they decide what goes in their bodies, not Dr. Fauci and not the government.
For saying this 4+ years ago, and then that was the slow decline. They kind of locked him up, and we didn't hear much from him then. I predicted when it happened, they would wait till people forgot about him by shutting him down and then get rid of him. Totally vindicated, a real hero. The Durham investigation will be able to lay it all out on the other side or here in just a moment, but I wanted to play a short compilation of him back at the time, 2017, doing what no other mainstream media person would do, tell the truth. Here it is.
Former judge and frequent Fox News contributor Andrew Napolitano has reportedly been taken off the air for now. Multiple outlets say Napolitano has been sidelined at Fox for repeating on-air unverified claims that former President Obama asked UK intelligence to spy on Trump Tower.
Did Barack Obama spy on Donald Trump when President Obama was in the White House and President Trump was Mr. Trump running for office? Well, we don't really know the answer to that. Sources have told Fox News that President Obama could very easily have and probably did use a foreign intelligence service to gather this information for him.
Three intelligence sources have informed Fox News that President Obama went outside the chain of command. He used GCHQ. What the heck is GCHQ? That's the initials for the British spying agency.
Both White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer and President Trump defended accusations against Obama by pointing to Napolitano. Fox News' Shepard Smith walked back Napolitano's claim shortly thereafter.
Fox News cannot confirm Judge Napolitano's commentary. Fox News knows of no evidence of any kind that the now President of the United States was surveilled at any time, in any way, full stop.
All right, so 4+ years later, Judge Napolitano totally vindicated. We're about 2 minutes from break, but sir, I know you're not about vindicating yourself, but we could see you getting penalized, shut down, and then removed from air for telling the truth and going after Obama, Hillary, the whole deep state. Now you are like going to be the image in the dictionary next to the word vindication now. Thanks for joining us on short notice, Judge.
You're very kind to say that, Alex, and thank you for running those old clips when my hair was a little darker. Look, I woke up yesterday morning like everybody else did. I hadn't paid attention to what Durham had filed over the weekend. But we now know that a significant arm of the federal government, armed with FBI agents and CIA agents, used federal assets to spy on Mr. Donald Trump during his presidential campaign and on President Donald Trump after he was already the president of the United States. We now know that, and the federal government of the United States acknowledges it, and if it has to, is prepared to prove it in court in the case against Michael Sussman.
Is that the craziest thing in your career? I mean, in my life, I've never seen anything like this. This is crazy.
Well, it was crazy because nobody would accept it. Nobody wanted to accept it. People came to me and begged to me, you owe President Obama an apology. For what? You know, about 3 months later, five GCHQ, that's British intelligence agents, went to the Guardian of London, a left-wing publication, and said, that judge in New York is correct. We didn't personally do it, but we know who did. So there was somewhat of a vindication then. The United States government, the Obama administration, still didn't accept it. But the filing from John Durham on Friday afternoon is so definitive. There's no way he could have made that filing unless he has the absolute proof to substantiate it. And, of course, it gets deeper.
It gets deeper, sir. Please stay there. We're right back. You're going to have the floor. We're so honored to have you because this is so big of a future of our country to expose this bureaucratic coup. We'll be right back. Well, I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I am starstruck right now because I've always loved Judge Knapp, watching decades on TV. I got to interview him before and, hang out with him some in New York. But now that he's vindicated and been punished and basically taken off the air for telling the truth, suspended and then phased out for exposing illegal deep state spying. And now we know it wasn't just the British. It wasn't just these private corporations. But then the government was involved, and the wheels are coming off this, and we're just blessed to have him here to lay this all out. Be sure and bookmark his site and find his weekday show, JudgeKnapp.com, JudgeKnapp.com. Judge, I wonder, I'm not going to criticize Fox News or others, but are they going to have you on for a victory lap now that you're so incredibly vindicated? I mean, that's probably a tongue-in-cheek question, but you were saying this is a huge deal. It certainly is. Explain to us why this is so definitive and what this Durham investigation means. And now the former head of national intelligence and all these folks say dozens of more indictments are coming out because they, quote, gave Durham the documents. What does all this mean?
Well, the I don't know about the indictments because some of these crimes have a 5-year statute of limitations, and much of this happened in 2016. So do the math. We're beyond the 5 years, which means Hillary herself may skate. However, if this was a conspiracy, and apparently it was, and if John Durham can report it, the 5 years is measured when the crime is completed, not when the crime started. So it would depend how far into the Trump administration the conspiracy extended. If the conspiracy ended on Election Day, it's too late to do anything about it. But it appears from the documents that John Durham filed on Friday afternoon that the conspiracy did not end on Election Day. It appears that there was a conversation in the Oval Office after Trump was elected, in which President Obama himself participated, and discussions were had about using federal assets to spy on him. And there are two very interesting people present there besides the President Obama. One is Jake Sullivan, who was Mrs. Clinton's chief intelligence advisor on spying and intelligence matters. He's now President Joe Biden's national security director. He has the highest national security clearance in the country. It's the same as the president's. The other interesting person there was Vice President Joe Biden. Now, this, of course, was 4 years ago. Was he part, Alex, was he part of the conspiracy to undermine Donald Trump's presidency by using federal assets? You know, you can compare this to Watergate. Watergate was the use of private assets paid for by the Republican National Committee to break into an office and seize proof of who was having sex with whom and who was paying who off. This is the use of federal assets. Jim Comey, all the way on the left there. John Brennan, head of the FBI at the time. John Brennan, all the way on the right there, head of the CIA at the time. So according to Durham, the use of federal assets to undermine a presidency. Now, that is a half dozen different crimes there. It would just depend upon when these crimes were committed or when this conspiracy ended or how much fortitude Durham has and who he goes after.
So there's been a lot of criticism of Durham taking years and years. But to me, I'm not a famous judge like you or a legal scholar, but this is like a super big ballsy move to do this with Merrick Garland as the attorney general and all this. I mean, this is like the hydrogen bomb effect, because we knew it was going on. I should ask you, you know, how you knew from your sources, but you know, we had our sources. We were talking about it too, but this is just such a big deal. This has got to really concern, as you said, not just Hillary, but clearly this goes above that.
Well, you know, it does. And I know you want to talk about this eventually. Why isn't the media covering this? Why is InfoWars and Newsmax and Fox News and the Wall Street Journal?
Exactly. I should have said that first. No one's covering. I mean, this makes Watergate look like a child's play. I mean, this is huge.
It does. Yes, it does. This should be. Never mind my allegations against the Obama administration. This is proof from a federal prosecutor. This should be on the front page, top of the fold of the same Washington Post that brought Richard Nixon down. And the same New York Times that claims it's the standard in American journalism, but you haven't heard a peep about them. You haven't heard it on CNN or MSNBC or CNBC or any of the networks. They think and hope that by ignoring this, it will go away. Now, it could go away if Michael Sussman pleads guilty. That's the lawyer accused of lying to the FBI who was a lawyer for Hillary Clinton's campaign, because he pleaded not guilty and there will be a trial, this stuff will come out at the trial. Now, I got to say a word about the crime that Sussman's charged with. I don't believe it should be a crime to lie to the FBI. Why? Because the Supreme Court has said the FBI can lie to you. Well, if the FBI can lie to you, you should be able to lie to them. They're not morally superior to you. But I am wrong. The law is what it is. If you lie to the FBI in an official inquiry, you can be indicted and prosecuted. That's what happened to Sussman.
And, Judge, let me interrupt you, because I'm always interested about this. That's why I won't talk to the FBI. I won't talk to the Jan 6 Committee. It's not that I'm going to lie. It's that they're going to say I'm a liar and indict me. So it's not just that you can't lie to them. They then say you're lying and play little split hairs games. When did that become the law that you can't lie to the FBI?
Oh, I don't know, but it's been the law for a long time, and the FBI will use it to the hilt. Here's in the Martha Stewart case, in the same conversation in which she lied to them, they lied to her. The FBI agent who lied to her got a promotion. She went to jail. She was convicted of lying. This is considered a low-level crime. The maximum penalty is just a year in jail. To a lawyer, it's devastating because you'll lose your license to practice. But the committee that you talk about sought you. In the Sussman case, he sought the FBI. He knocked on the door and said, I have to come to you. I have devastating information about this guy, Donald Trump, and his connections to Russia. Question, are you representing the Hillary Clinton campaign? Oh, no. I have this from independent sources. That's the alleged lie. He instigated the conversation himself, during which it is alleged that he lied, and he had the conversation with his now former friend, Peter Baker, who was the general counsel of the FBI. Normally, you don't get to talk to the general counsel about this evidence, but when you're a high-ranking, big-shot Washington, D.C. lawyer, and the general counsel is your friend, and you want to feed him some nonsense, that's the guy you go to.
Wow. We're going to go to break and come back. This is just riveting. Judge Andrew Napolitano, I know you want to make this about yourself, but just in 50 seconds here, I mean, how did you know all this stuff? I guess sources? Because you've been proven right.
Well, yes, I had sources. One of my sources outed himself, and the New York Times went for his jugular. But something of this magnitude, you have to verify it to three levels. So in addition to the source who outed himself, I had two other sources who were able to verify what I said before I said it.
Wow. Judge Andrew Napolitano is with us. You got to bookmark his site and watch his show. I watch it all the time, judgenap.com. And, man, I just thought of him instantly this weekend when this all broke. I was like, oh, my gosh. Because, I mean, he was one of the top guys at Fox. As soon as he covered this, bloop, they phased his ass out. And that's what people pay for, to tell the truth. We'll be right back. He's a hero. Well, completely vindicated, the capital V, Judge Andrew Napolitano joins us. The minute in 2017 he covered illegal spying against the Trump campaign and President Trump from his sources, they suspended him and then basically pulled him off TV until he was finally let go. And that was the reason for that. We could all see it. And he's a tough guy. He's not whining about it. He wants to just talk about the current news and how big this is. But wow, Clinton campaign paid to infiltrate Judge Napolitano broke all this. Again, Trump campaign paid to infiltrate Trump Tower. White House servers to link Trump to Russia. Durham finds. And he's got the evidence. And he's indicted the Clinton lawyer. And we know all this went on. And as you said, they outed themselves. They had a New York Times article on January 20, 2017, where they bragged that they had wiretapped Trump and claimed that was the evidence he was a Russian. But there was no evidence. So that was the first outing. Then Napolitano dug into it and found out more. So I could ask 1,000 questions, Judge, but in the 25 minutes we've got left, I'd like to just give you the floor, just the run of this show as the guy that tried to stop this deep state coup against America on what's currently happening, how you think they're going to respond back to this, what is Hillary, what does Obama do? Because what do you call this? That's my first question in this segment. Do we call it Obama Spygate, Hillary Spygate? Do we call this deep state coup against America? What do we call this scandal of scandals?
You know, that's a good question. Somebody who's good at this stuff will put a handle on it and that handle will last. But the law will call this a conspiracy, an agreement to break laws. And that's really the danger to Mrs. Clinton.
This next clip is Norm Pattis representing Alex on some of the Sandy Hook cases. But also he's saying that the politics of virtue is playing very, very strongly into our future politics. But anyway, he talks about the Remington case and this recent judgment awarded some of those Sandy Hook, families. But here we go now with Norm Pattis.
Well, you know, you make a facetious point, but it involves an important principle, and that is the notion of proximate cause. But for the fact that we all got out of bed this morning, we wouldn't be aware of all the suffering in the world. Is the fact that we woke up, does that make us responsible for that suffering? Should somebody pay us for what we viewed? No, that's what's called but-for causation. The world is a string of causation of events linked to one another when looked back at from a certain perspective in time. But proximate cause says there has to be some limitation on causation. And usually the doctrines that rein in limitations on causation are an identifiable victim in imminent risk of harm where it was foreseeable that the person would be harmed. Now, if Remington had had the balls to try that case and put it on in front of a jury, they could have said, look, maybe the advertising was irresponsible, but it's not proximately related to Adam Lanza's decision to go out and wipe out a classroom of first graders and the adults trying to protect them. It was a horrible event. No one is here to justify or excuse what Mr. Lanza did. But when the Koskov firm can say, look, our purpose in bringing this litigation was to send a message to manufacturers, to banks and insurers, don't stand behind these folks. They're trying to do by legislative or by litigation fiat what the Second Amendment prohibits and what legislation.
Yeah, let's be clear. They're filing lawsuits in deep blue areas and saying, hey, let's shut down the free speech of conservatives. Let's shut down the rights of all gun owners. It's literally East Coast controlled areas suing to take the Midwesterners' guns. I mean, this, and they brag about this. Norm, you know, I'm just going to say this stuff. I didn't learn this from you, but I'm just going to bring it up right now. They want me to come out against the Second Amendment. Hell will freeze over before I do it. And they want $500 million. I don't have $1 million in cash. Okay? So it's just insane. They want us off air, and it ain't going to happen. They might be able to come in this building and shut this down, but Mr. Alex Jones is going to be bigger than ever, which I know they're mad about. I don't know how much of that you know about, Norm, but I learned about that from the folks at GCN. They want $500 million. GCN doesn't have $5 million. Why don't they say $50 billion, $100 billion? Because it's all about control and shutting down speech, and they just put these big numbers up there to terrorize people, Norm.
It's about optics. I think I think they will have bragging rights. If they can obtain a large verdict against you, which would result in shutting free speech systems down, they'll say they silenced Alex Jones. But as you pointed out, they'll never silence Alex Jones. You will reemerge in another context, and you'll reemerge because the thing that they don't understand is that you speak to a sense of populist rage around the country, which won't be slaked by elitist lawsuits shutting down people's rights to express themselves or defend themselves.
Well, let me just say this. Do you think we should have maybe $50 billion to the families, and of course the law firm first? Maybe the Democratic Party, now that they own gunshot victims, they own all this, maybe we should all just give all our wealth to them. I mean, because how much money? Is $73 million enough? Is all the other money enough? Is the hundreds of millions they raised off of all their charities enough? I mean, I know we're all collectively guilty for their children dying. I just want to know what is enough. And the answer is nothing. We want your speech. We want your country. We want your self-defense. And George Soros runs your DAs. He's going to take your police away.
No, these eye-popping numbers aren't about money. They're about control. And if you can be starved into submission, the goal is submission. And so this company was put out of business. They're aiming to put you out of business and to put free speech systems out of business. And they're aiming, maybe even they harbor the fantasy of taking over the studio and transforming it into the broadcast that they want. But the point is they're failing to realize that you're responding to a need in the public at large that they can't satisfy. So the info war will continue. It will just move to another forum if they are successful. Now, I'm, you know, you've
asked. And you just let the cat out of the bag. I mean, they approached GCN and said, let us just take the show over and put our own stuff on or take him off the air. I mean, that's how crazy this is. The left is so entitled with all their elitist power and money. They believe they don't just get to shut us up. They get to move in to who we were. It doesn't work like that.
The single most significant threat to civil liberties, in my view at least, in our lifetime, in the next 10 years, is going to be a struggle over what I call the politics of virtue. And there is a struggle for the levers of control by those who think we know how best to live, both in terms of public health, global security, climate change, with respect to guns, with respect to speech, with respect to speech code, with respect to what we can do. They're aided and assisted by large algorithms that can be programmed to respond to that vision of the good, and we're going to see increasing efforts at social control, which will reach down to the ordinary person in their pocketbook. Your credit card will become a means of depriving you of access to things when the code isn't accepted because your social utility score isn't right. That's from the bottom up. From the top down, large institutions will be crippled or bankrupt or taken over with large judgments if they can be obtained. So, you know, I don't know what the guys in the executive suite at Remington were thinking, but this is a case that should have been fought. And a jury of ordinary people might have reached a different decision, as we are hoping they will do in the case against you, Alex. I don't have any doubt that Remington's lawyers will come out swinging and ask for tens, if not hundreds, of millions in a jury trial. And we will ask a jury to follow the law and to use their common sense and to conclude that if they came for you first, they're coming for these jurors next. And in the end, there's no satisfying a Republican virtue.
But, I mean, Norm, listen, I've been in 4 years of litigation. You've been out here 3-plus years. You've been in all our books, everything. I don't have $500,000 in my personal bank account, which I enjoy. It's so hilarious that I can pop up anywhere and reach all the same systems, be bigger than ever, and they think they're going to get money, and they're not. Because we know, though, they now know that. They don't want money. Like you said, they want to silence us. That was a cherry on top after they shut down our oldest gun manufacturer, Remington, to get that money from their insurance carriers.
It was a sign of what's to come. I mean, I'm just shocked by this. I think it's bad for the civil justice system. I think it's going to encourage legislation by litigation. Ambitious plaintiffs' lawyers everywhere are going to try to use the bankruptcy code to enforce their visions of the good, and we will enter into a form of economic warfare disguised as litigation where the rights of the non-well-heeled, those without financial backing, are going to be held in jeopardy. By those who have financial backing and can turn the courts into a tool of extortion. The Remington settlement for all hopping character is a nightmare for the civil justice system. It eviscerates traditional notions of legal causation.
No, I totally agree, but here's the good news. Historically, bullying with Americans and let's just say historically Anglo-Saxon ideas and thought does not go too well. Some places, intimidation works. It's going to blow up in their face. It's going to cause massive resistance. So they bit off more than they can chew. Norm, let's come back and talk about the Sarah Palin case in the New York Times straight ahead.
Beginning yesterday, the local authorities in Canada and Ottawa began to crack down on the truckers. They started arresting a couple of the leaders, a man and a woman. They started taking and towing some of the trucks. And today I understand they're smashing some truck windows and things like this. And there's no reaction by the crowds up there yet. They're trying to stay peaceful as they can. And so I have a couple of clips here of the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, responding to some statements made in the Parliament up there. And by a landsman, she was a member of Parliament, and Melissa Landsman, and then we're going to go with some commentary about really what is happening over in Ukraine, and put some other statements and some other interviews up about that. But here we go with a couple of clips. This first clip, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says the Conservatives are standing with the people with the swastikas. Are you kidding me? And this is really getting ridiculous. And we're going to have a couple of clips like that. And then there's a nice interview that Laura Ingraham did with Landsman, Melissa Landsman, a member of Parliament of the Canadian Parliament. But here we go with this outlandish statement that Justin Trudeau said about the Conservatives are standing with those with swastikas. Here we go now.
Positive, optimistic, hopeful vision for public life isn't a naive dream. It could be a powerful force for change. If Canadians are to trust their government needs to trust Canadians. Those are the words of the Prime Minister in 2015. These people, very often misogynistic, racist, women haters, science deniers, the fringe. Same Prime Minister 6 years later as he fans the flames of an unjustified national emergency. So, Mr. Speaker, when did the Prime Minister lose his way? When did it happen?
You're right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, Conservative Party members can stand with people who wave swastikas. They can stand with people who wave the Confederate flag. We will choose to stand with Canadians who deserve to be able to get to their jobs, who be able to get their lives back. These illegal protests need to stop, and they will, Mr. Speaker.
Here's another clip in their parliament of Justin Trudeau responding to some statements by another member of parliament. And he's just off the wall. He doesn't know what he's doing. Actually, he should have made a deal and come out the hero of Canadians in stopping these mandates. But he's not smart enough to do that. And he's actually carrying out the Crown's dictates, really. So here we go, Justin Trudeau responding to another a member of parliament.
Absolutely right. This is a time for responsible leadership, not crass partisanship. The situation requires additional tools not held by other federal, provincial, or territorial law. It's what responsible leadership requires. These measures must be and will be compliant with the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We will always defend the rights of Canadians to peaceful assembly and to freedom of expression, but these blockades need to end, and unfortunately, Conservative politicians continue to encourage the leaders of these blockades.
Well, Leader of the Opposition.
Well, let's get down to the basics of what this is really about. This is about the Prime Minister's ideological attachment to keeping COVID restrictions and mandates. 63% of Canadians want the restrictions and mandates to end. Conservatives presented a motion yesterday asking simply for a plan, but the Prime Minister is in denial and is ignoring the science. He might as well be back at the cottage because he's doing nothing productive or constructive to help this situation. Can the Prime Minister tell Canadians when he will end the divisive, outdated, and unscientific mandate and restrictions?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Like I said, this is a time for responsible leadership to end these blockades. Unfortunately, the Conservatives continue to play partisan games. The Conservative member of Provence just yesterday...
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut off the Prime Minister just for a second. And just... I mean, heckling is usually throwing one comment out. Clever, hopefully, although not always necessary. But what I'm hearing is someone bullying and trying to drown someone out. That's not heckling. I just want everyone to take a deep breath. And I'll let the Prime Minister start from the top, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, we see that even in a moment of extremely challenging times when people are moving forward with responsible leadership and responsible tools, the Conservatives can't help themselves but play crass political games and divide.
You're beginning to see that Justin Trudeau has made the wrong choices here. He's young, he's inexperienced, he's bad judges, he has very terrible judgment. But Laura Ingraham recently interviewed Melissa Lansbourne, who is a member of Parliament, the Canadian Parliament, that appeared just minutes ago in some of those clips I played. And here's some really insightful things. Lansbourne says he's out of control. This thing is out of his control now. So anyway, this is very, very interesting, Laura Ingraham interviewing Melissa Lansbourne.
Now, the eyes of the world are on Ottawa tonight as Freedom Convoy protesters prepare for major police action in the coming hours. So you got tow trucks, they're already on standby, and earlier today, police began a mass ticketing campaign. warning protesters, you must leave the area now. Anyone blocking the streets are committing a criminal offense, and you may be arrested. Police liaisons even told protesters they would be pushed out by tomorrow. Now, meanwhile, Trudeau's authoritarian tactics have sparked a massive backlash abroad and at home. In fact, today, Trudeau was taken to task on the floor of Parliament, where he let his true colors fly.
If Canadians are to trust their government needs to trust Canadians. Those are the words of the Prime Minister in 2015. These people, very often misogynistic, racist, women haters, science deniers, the fringe. Same Prime Minister 6 years later as he fans the flames of an unjustified national emergency.
Conservative Party members can stand with people who wave swastikas. They can stand with people who wave the Confederate flag. We will choose to stand with Canadians who deserve to be able to get to their jobs, who be able to get their lives back.
Now, the courageous member of Parliament you just saw, Melissa Lantzman, joins me now. MP Lantzman, thank you for joining us tonight. Now,
thanks for having
tell me. Tell us what was going through your mind when you heard his reference to swastikas.
Look, this is not a surprise to me. You just said it. This is his true colors. I sit there and watch him divide and wedge and stigmatize Canadians every single day. And today, the rest of Canada saw a G7 prime minister go after a Jewish member of parliament and then walk away and not apologize.
Do you think there is an anti-Semitic element to this, or was it just a slip, a verbal slip?
Well, look, I think that words matter. And if you looked at my inbox in my office and you saw what my staff was looking at, when you accuse somebody of standing with a swastika, you get an influx of people calling you a Nazi. And that's not okay. And he is driving that. He's been driving division in this country since the protest started, for his political gain. And I think his leadership is in trouble, the country's in trouble, and he's lost control of the situation.
Now, I would like to play now what happened when you did demand the apology from Trudeau. Watch.
I think he owes me an apology. I'd like an apology, and I think he owes an apology to all members of this House.
Now, MP Lantzman, he actually left after insulting you like that. That was his response. Kind of, his run and hide is kind of his trademark at this point. Your reaction?
Yeah, look, he's lost control, and I'll just give your viewers, I can't call that out. There's rules that say that I can't call that out.
Okay.
But he was not there. He has not apologized, and I expect an apology. I gotta tell you, Canada is the best country in the world. My parents chose it. I'm a child of a grandchild of Holocaust survivors. And to watch what is happening and what the Prime Minister is driving in this country is frankly egregious.
How much hate has been directed at you and others who just believe in free expression and the right to protest, even take away concerns about mandates and the truckers and cross-border traffic? Set that aside. How much hate have you seen out there just directed at you?
Look, I think the division in this country is growing, and it's growing because of the Prime Minister's rhetoric on this. We've got an urban-rural divide. We've got an east-west divide, and that's being wedged by the Prime Minister. I'm the party's transport critic, so we've been calling to an end to these mandates, particularly the cross-border trucking mandate since earlier this year. We are one of the highest vaccination rates, and we also have we are the country with the highest, most draconian restrictions. So if he wants to end this today, he could have done that 19 days ago before putting forward a national emergency that is not justified. He could have gone out and talked to people rather than calling them racist and misogynist, and we could have put an end to this. He can drop the mandates and he can drop the restrictions today, and I think that we will have a much more cohesive country.
MP Lantzman, thank you very much for joining us tonight and being a leader in your country at this point.
Well, that almost wraps up our program here for today. We're going to end with a James Corbett he's going to be speaking about the Ukraine and the European Union, and he's got really good insight. But anyway, here we go, and we're just going to close out to the music, and I'll put up on the Secret Truth site, the secrettruth.com site, a click off, or I might embed his particular program, his whole video program. But we're just going to include an excerpt from here to the end of our program. James Corbett out of Japan. He's awful good, and he's talking about Ukraine, the European Union. So here we go with James Corbett.
Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato for MediaMonarchy.com. Privacy and security are not mutually exclusive. We've got that story, plus Ukraine is about Germany. But first, Canada invokes Emergencies Act to seize convoy funding. We grab this from offguardian.org. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland held a joint press conference where they announced their decision to invoke the Emergencies Act in response to the Freedom Convoy protests. The Emergencies Act, 1988, is exactly what it sounds like, a piece of legislation designed to grant the government special powers in the event of an emergency. By officially declaring the Freedom Convoy an emergency under Part 2 of the Act, Public Order Emergencies, they claim the convoy comprises an emergency that arises from threats to the security of the nation of Canada that's so serious as to be a national emergency. So formally and legally, the government says these people represent threats to the security of Canada. These people with locked arms, singing and dancing in the streets with smiles on their faces, constitutes a threat to the security of Canada. So, James, my apartment management might call real emergencies, and they do, blood, flood, or fire. Don't call us if it's not one of those three things. And this is none of those. The distinct lack of a real emergency is probably why the CBC talking heads are reporting that the convoy wanted to overthrow the government, and of course that they're being directed by Russian agents. The Emergencies Act gives the government the power to take special temporary measures that may not be appropriate in normal times, which is of course delightfully vague, but what form are these measures taking? Seeing as the act has literally never before been used, it's hard to predict how they'll use it. For now at least, seems to be financial. And we've seen this already for the last couple of weeks. Freeland detailed how the government will attempt to monitor and control crowdfunding sites and payment platforms moving forward. All crowdfunding platforms must register with the Financial Transactions and Reports Analysis Center of Canada, FINTRAC, which requires them to report any large or suspicious payments to the financial authorities. This specifically includes cryptocurrency. Canadian banks are now empowered to freeze or suspend regular old bank accounts without a court order and are protected from any legal action against them as a result. To be clear, if a bank freezes your account because they believe you donated to the convoy and you maybe lose business or miss a writ payment as a result, you cannot sue them, if that sounds familiar. This is the panopticon of the new digital gulag. This is the start of the depersoning. This will expand to every country and every offense, if we let it. And it won't stop there. The precedent has been set. In future, other acts vaguely defined as domestic terrorism could incur the same penalty, refusing a vaccine, for example. Specific rules don't even matter. They will likely change based on what the establishment narrative demands, but the punishment will stay the same. Play along or we take your money. This amount of control is exactly why they've been pressing so hard for a cashless society. James, an interesting one. I mentioned briefly on my Morning Monarchy, Ottawa Police Chief Peter Slowly worked for Deloitte, the folks that built the Vax Track system for the government. And then, oh, wait, update, Peter Slowly resigns as Ottawa's police chief. James?
You know, it's funny, James, because growing up as in Alberta, I remember my dad talking when I was a kid about how Trudeau ruined the country and every Albertan hates Trudeau. Of course, he was talking about Pierre Elliott Trudeau, and it's funny because I have played that clip a number of times about Trudeau invoking the War Powers Act to deal with the FLQ crisis and the implications of that way back in the day. And here we are, and Trudeau is now in declaring the son of War Powers Act, the Emergencies Act. Yeah, very interesting. And hats off to Kit Knightley for putting the emphasis on exactly the right place with this story, because the real reason, what they are doing here, is invoking these emergency powers in order to stop the funding, and specifically to bring these crowdfunding sites within the purview of FinTrack. That is what this is about. That is the heart of what is going on with this move. And yeah, of course, there's the policing and other things. Who knows? Maybe they'll even use this as an excuse to roll out the military in some sort of subsidiary, we're helping the police kind of role, just to, you know, get the population used to that. But I think the heart of this is about this cashless society agenda. And that should be worrying to everyone, because this was, I think, was one big loose-hanging thread in the overall agenda that they definitely want to weave into the tapestry of the global world order they're erecting right now. You guys can talk with each other online, but oh, you're trying to organize? Oh, you're trying to pool your resources and direct them towards things that we don't like? Uh-oh, no. So this is an incredibly important part of setting that precedent, and it's no surprise that people like Deloitte's Peter Slowly would be involved in this. But let's play that game a little bit more, because of course there are all sorts of fingerprints all over what's happening in Canada right now. Just last week we were talking about Klaus Schwab's penetration of cabinets around the world, including that of World Economic Forum young global leader Justin Trudeau, who, let's be honest, is a puppet of the most obvious kind. No one on the global stage takes Canada's first blackface prime minister seriously, nor should they. He's a lightweight. Who's really the people that are really penetrating this cabinet? I would point to someone like Deputy PM Chrystia Freeland, right? Minister of Finance, who is the one who is actually making that announcement in that speech about FinTrack and the crowdfunding sites and what have you. And who is she? Oh, let's play the game. Look her up at the World Economic Forum. Oh, that's right. She is a member of the World Economic Forum's Board of Trustees. It doesn't get much more inner ring than that. So again, the fingerprints are all over, and exactly as we were saying last week, you have to be willfully blind not to see that there is a global agenda that is unfolding right now, a global oligarchy, a clique that is running these events, and they are going to use these crises for exactly what they want to use them for. This is no exception to that rule. Kit Knightley nails it. This is about the cashless society or the next steps toward it, and This is the real battle, I think, that we're facing right now.
I think it was just last week I mentioned Chrystia Freeland as the charity fraudster in Canada, who then, as many criminals do, they get rewarded for their chicanery, of course, within the powers that shouldn't be. I like that, James, the son of the War Powers Act being used by the son of Trudeau. John Rappaport was writing, I think, about the intelligence connections between essentially infiltrating and GoFundMe, GoFraudMe, and all of this going on. But back to the cashless control grid, James, it sounds like the U.S. could maybe use some FinTrack. And much like you were mentioning there, like Trudeau running things, the same with Brandon. This following article, of course, mentions Biden's going to do this and Biden wants to do that. It's of course, that's the puppet frontman for the powers that shouldn't be, as it has always been. They just kind of change the faces sometimes. IRS abandons plans to require third-party facial recognition. This sounds like good news. The IRS, the hated Internal Revenue Service here in the States, will not use a third-party company to verify new accounts with facial recognition, the agency announced in a news release. The proposed move, which would have used a company called ID.me, ID.me, criticized resoundingly by privacy advocates and even some members of Congress who say the technology is flawed and wouldn't recognize users if they experienced significant physical changes, let alone if you're taking weird gene therapy shots that are changing you from within. Previously, the IRS said it would use the software to cut down on fraudulent accounts. The IRS will transition away from using a third-party service for facial recognition to help authenticate people creating new online accounts. That is the quote, according to their news release. Senator Ron Wyden, the Democrat from Oregon, who I have said for years is one of the only halfway decent Congress critters out there, he, of course, tweeted, "This is big," While this transition may take time, the administration recognizes that privacy and security are not mutually exclusive. The transition will occur over the coming weeks in order to prevent larger disruptions to taxpayers during the filing season. At the same time, the agency continued, it will bring online an additional authentication process that doesn't involve facial recognition. It's not exactly clear how that will be accomplished ahead of the tax filing deadline in mid-April. And as I said on my morning show, I'm saying it can't and they won't. They'll extend the payer theft's deadline again anyway, as they've done ever since the dawn of the COVID era. But James, going over this a second time for me does now help me realize that they say, oh, we're not going to use this service. We're going to come up with something else in a couple of weeks. I don't believe it, but I, of course, know that you never know what the government might bust out. And, of course, it could be dangerous. But really, it's the language that initially I found disturbing before I found this secondary part disturbing. The IRS will transition away from using a third-party service for facial recognition. Does that just mean they're going to make their own in-house version? Is that what they're going to try and bust out in 6 weeks? Their own in-house version, I joke and guess, James, they'd probably just steal someone else's software and install, of course, backdoors like they usually do. We have been covering this topic a lot from just last month. Just this last January, New World Next Week, payment apps will now have to report transactions to the IRS. Plus, of course, Yellen defends IRS rule requiring banks to report all transactions over $600. James, they are moving on every level on this.
Absolutely. Yes, they are. Because, again, this is part and parcel of that cashless agenda that we were just talking about. And it is a global agenda that is rolling out all around the world right now. So, yes, you just pointed out an extremely important thing that happens in story after story after story. They only want you to read the headline. Oh, I know that story. They're scrapping some facial. Okay, it's over. No. Read down. Because as they say later, they are going to bring online an additional authentication process that does not involve facial recognition. And they say, don't worry, this will not interfere with your ability to pay the taxes owed this year, and it will not apply to this tax season. It has no other impact on the current tax season. So I don't know what that means. It sounds like they're doing a partial backtrack, and undoubtedly that's just a strategic withdrawal so they can regroup and put this forward in a different way. There's a number of things to pursue in a story like this. The one that immediately jumped out at me is, who is ID.me? And why would they win a contract with the IRS to do something like this? So I just did the very, very basic sort of preliminary search and found that ID.me started out as something called TroopSwap, which was apparently like a Groupon kind of thing specifically for military members. They then transitioned into TroopID to provide online authentication for military members. And then they rebranded as ID.me and started getting all these contracts from the U.S. Government to basically provide a bunch of authentication services and have done so in a number of states around the U.S. So there's something for researchers to dig into. Any budding researchers in the crowd want to look deeper into ID.me and how it ties into this national authentication whatever thing that was signed in whatever it was, 2013? Was it Obama started this whole push for an online digital identity that the U.S. government will let the third party, don't worry, it's going to be through the private sector. It's not going to be a government thing, but we're going to award the contracts to certain companies. So there's an important story going on there. But of course, the other obvious side of this is the facial recognition biometric scanning tied to your taxes. Where have we seen that before? Oh, right, India, the Aadhaar system. Well, biometric ID, government issued, and now it's going to be tied into your taxes and all of this. And what could possibly go wrong? Oops, Aadhaar was hacked. Oops. Oh, well, there goes a billion people's eyeballs and fingerprints. Which, I don't know, it seems it's kind of difficult to change that. You can change a password, you can't change your fingerprints quite so easily, right? So there are some significant problems with this, but why the push? Why the push? It's almost like we're in this great transitionary phase right now where we're walking around here, we're in the, get with the times, James. This is 2022. We're walking around with these slave tracking devices in our pockets, radiating our testicles with more computing power at our fingertips than entire supercomputers had just decades ago. It's a wonderful, marvelous 21st century age. But we're also walking around with these stupid pieces of paper, these laminated pieces of card that's our identity. And we have to, why do we have all that? It's so cumbersome. Can't you just put it on our phones And eventually, can't you just put our phones in our arms? I mean, it'll be so great once we get the chip, right? We know where this is going. It is all part and parcel. Cashless society, online ID, social credit, CBDC, all of these things are part and parcel of the same agenda. So I'm going to be talking more about the cashless society, and I'm going to be talking more about the digital ID grid. But just to give you a preview of that, as people might have noticed recently, what has Ontario just recently come out with now that they're going through this crisis in Ontario? Oh my God, it's a national insurrection, I tell you. Digital ID in Ontario. Learn about Ontario's digital identity program, which introduces a new convenient way to prove who you are that will make accessing online and in-person services simpler, safer, and more secure. Yay! Well, I don't know. I don't know if it involves scanning your eyeballs or fingerprints at this point, but you know it's coming. I mean, the technology is there. They're just trying to roll it out to the public in the most calm and wonderful way possible. So I have a lot more to say about this in the future, but just know this is all part and parcel of the same agenda.
I think whether it's the internet or the roads, they're going to let the old thing fall apart and let the new people who are trusted vaccine takers, they're going to get all the best new stuff while we all wait around like schmucks hoping to, what, get a loaf of bread for $20? I don't know. Geico, James, the big insurance place here in the States. Geico, Government Employee Insurance Corporation. That's what Geico stands for. That's not what they do anymore, but they started out as a Government Employee Insurance Corporation. And you can see the mission creep from that to all we've talked about, James. I just recalled, I saw an article this morning. I get, because I'm a radio professional, I get sent all these dumb news prep emails. Here's the thing everybody's talking about. Here are the main stories everybody's talking about. Oh, here's that funny video. It makes sure, of course, that your media is completely homogenized and lame all across the country. One of the articles I saw this morning was, don't worry, tax cheats or whatever word they used. The IRS can't keep up. Their computers are so old and everything's so flunky. You can probably get away with not paying taxes. To which I think I even said out loud to the article, I was like, wow, then I could be like the NFL and General Electric and Nike and Apple and not pay taxes. That sounds possibly also like a perfect setup. Oh, they won't catch you. Totally go for it, man. Our third and final story on this New World Next Week, episode 476, might actually be our most pressing and important. The crisis in Ukraine is not about Ukraine. It's about Germany. RonPaulInstitute.org has the article, which begins with an interesting quote, James, the primordial interest of the United States, over which for centuries we have fought wars, the first, the second, Cold Wars, has been the relationship between Germany and Russia, because united there, they're the only force that could threaten us, and to make sure that that doesn't happen. George Friedman, the CEO of essentially corporate intelligence outlet Stratfor, talking to the Chicago Council on Foreign Affairs. Mike Whitney writes, the Ukrainian crisis has nothing to do with Ukraine. It's about Germany, and in particular, a pipeline that connects Germany to Russia called Nord Stream 2. James, it sounds like it was some sort of new VPN they were pushing on people. Again, the language is easily confusing to people. Washington sees the Nord Stream 2 pipeline as a threat to its primacy in Europe and has tried to sabotage the project at every turn. Even so, Nord Stream has pushed ahead and is now fully operational and ready to go. Once German regulators provide the final certification, the gas deliveries will begin. German homeowners and businesses get a reliable source of clean and inexpensive energy, while Russia will see a significant boost to their gas revenues. Win-win for both. The U.S. foreign policy establishment is not happy about these developments. They don't want Germany to become more dependent on Russian gas because commerce builds trust, and trust leads to the expansion of trade. As relations grow warmer, more trade barriers lifted, regulations eased, travel and tourism increase, and a new security architecture evolves.